Hello, everyone. Welcome to Measuring the Score podcast, the podcast where we offer our opinions on film scores and the films they're inspired by. I'm Chris.
And I'm Leslie.
Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to a very special bonus surprise composer showcase episode on Measuring the Score. I am very excited about this one, Leslie. How about you?
I am as well.
Well, of course, I say it every episode. We're always excited about it.
Right? We love music.
Exactly. But I'm very excited about this one because we have a composer with us today. Now, it's not very often we have the composers, but we do have one today. And he has worked on some very notable films such as Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and the sequel, Captain America, Civil War, The Predator, The Gray Man. And he also has worked on Extraction with Chris Hemsworth and the upcoming sequel and the show we're going to be talking about today, Citadel. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Alex Belcher. Hey, Alex, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, man. It is exciting to have you
right here. We're happy to have you with us today.
Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
So, Citadel, the first thing I'm going to ask is this. Now, this is a very, very big show. Now, it is now streaming on Amazon Prime. I highly recommend the show. I got to see the pilot episode. And the score is amazing, first off. But when you got the job, when you got offered the job, did you just kind of sit back and go, holy crap, how am I going to do this? Or was it, all right, I'm just going to take it one step at a time because this is kind of big.
I mean, it is. And I was definitely honored to get the gig. I was lucky in the fact that I've done a lot of films working with either as an additional composer or as co-writer for the Russo brothers. Mm-hmm. And I think we were just wrapping up the Extraction 1 when Joe and Anthony sent me the script to read and sort of discuss. So it got started at such an early phase. Right. I think I was just coming out of Extraction. I think I was a little bit, you know, I didn't quite realize, you know, the enormity of the project just yet.
Right.
But there was certainly, you know, along the way, moments of like, oh my God, how are we going to get this done?
Just right?
The scope of the show. It's such a big international sort of story that takes place all over the world with all these characters. And it's a spy show. It's an action show. It's a thriller. It's a drama. It's got comedic elements.
Right.
Once the show started coming together, then it was like, okay, how do we do this? How do we tie all this stuff together? There were certainly moments like that along the way.
Now, I got to say, you know, the show is being really billed as an action spy show. But I got to tell you, man, from the pilot episode, the very start of it, you had a very romantic feel to it. I wasn't really expecting that. But as the story progresses, you learn about the two leads and how they had a romantic thing. I'm not going to spoil it because I want people to watch the show. But I got to say, man, that was a brilliant choice doing that. I mean, just right out the gate, just having a very romantic and seductive feel to it. So I really want to congratulate you on that. It was well done.
Thank you very much. That means a lot. That opening sequence is some of my favorite stuff that I've ever written. So that means a lot. I appreciate that.
Fantastic.
And we start off this giant action show with a waltz.
Yeah, I know. And it was great.
And when I spent forever on this opening sequence because I had written some stuff early on in the when I'd read the script, some of those themes ended up in the show and, you know, some of it ended up on the cutting room floor. But when we started that sequence, I was very well aware that there was a lot riding on this opening sequence because it's a very quick, even though it's about 15 minutes, it's an introduction to this universe that the audience doesn't know anything about. You know, this is an entire universe that we've got to do an introduction to the world for.
Right.
And then things quickly change. And so you've only got a limited amount of time to go, this is the world that you're living in, right. And hang on because we're going on a very wild, very fast changing ride. Right. But
oh, and, you know, and you know, you said fast right there, because it does not take long for it to just really ramp up, because you get this whole fight sequence inside of a bathroom, which was awesome to see. And then the music was just like ramped up, and I'm like, whoa, okay, wasn't expecting that. Cool.
Yeah, and that opening sequence, you know, I was very, very nervous to play it at our first meeting with the Russo brothers.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, I'm like, this is a giant project, and there's giant movie stars, and it's basically a film in six parts.
Right.
I'm leading it off with a very romantic era waltz.
Right.
You know, and I thought for sure it was going to get like, hey, that's really good, but no. And funnily enough, that version 1.0 is what made it in the show.
So. I'm so glad that they allowed you to do that, because seriously, it really does. Because we just talked about our last episode was the score to Unstoppable by Harry Gregson Williams.
Yeah.
And we were talking about...
I love Harry. I'm a big Harry fan.
Oh, me too. Seriously. Ever since Unstoppable, actually. But the one thing that Leslie really loves about scores is the fact that, you know, when you incorporate elements of the film into the score, and you really did that with the romantic feel, because I'm just going, okay, where are we going with this? Are we talking? And then when you get to see the two leads, I'm like, okay, that explains everything right there. It just worked. It worked so well with that.
I had an opportunity to listen to the main theme. You know, we just had a baby, so I've been all over the place and busy. But I did listen to the main.
Congratulations!
Thank you. I did listen to the main theme, and I really liked the depth that you created with that theme song. I could hear the layers in it. And, you know, Chris can attest to this, that, you know, my favorite scores are those that invoke a feeling or have that depth to it. So, you know, I really thought it was well done. I really liked it. You could hear the spy elements. You could hear, you know, the other elements of the show. I thought it was amazing. You did a great job.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot. It was the main titles was. Something in the main theme that was something that, again, it was another like fine line to walk. Like, this is a spy show, we can't ignore that.
Right.
We can't.
Right.
Such a in the zeitgeist of espionage film and television, there's such a history. People are going to expect a certain thing. Audiences are going to expect a certain thing. But how do you do that and not be too like pastiche or too cliche?
Right.
Modernize it.
Right. Sound like Pink Panther, right?
Exactly.
Although Pink Panther might would have worked for the opening, right? maybe just
yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah.
That would have been fantastic. But that it was a lot of fun, that main title thing. But the main theme, like, I knew just sort of sitting down, the first big idea, I was like, it needs to be lyrical. Like all great spy tunes are lyrical.
Right. Oh, yes.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na. You know, there's that end sort of phrase of my tune was this sort of. Okay, it's got to be lyrical. Okay, we've got that. Now I've got that on the piano. Then I got to go, how do I make it modern?
Right.
How do I make it fit into 2023?
And you got that big brass in there coming in.
That's what I really liked. I like those bass notes. You could hear the bass, but yet you had it counteracted really nicely with the higher voices. It had a nice, well-rounded sound to it, but you did it in such a way that even though it was modernized, it still sounded classical.
Yeah. And that was this whole score was that was the tightrope. And to be honest, there were times where it would be like, okay, that's too far.
Right.
In one the other in writing, you know, in the day to day of writing to the scene, sometimes it'd be like, that's too 1940s. You got to modernize it a bit more. And then sometimes it'd be like, it's too modern. It's
getting right.
So that balance.
And that was something too, because I've listened to a lot of your work, especially like Extraction and the Contractor, which I really like that score as well. I did hear little hints of some of the other stuff that you worked on, like The Gray Man, but this score in particular was something that was very not you. Was that something you wanted right from the beginning? Or is, I mean, because I know as a composer myself, you always want to try to do something different every time, but was, because this score is very vastly different from some of your other work.
Yeah. Yes, we knew going, you know, the early conversations, it was, hey, it needs to be orchestral. It can't be too, again, too pastiche or anything like that. It needs to be orchestral, which I was excited about. And one of the things that Joe and Anthony sort of mentioned was what we did. We did a film called 21 Bridges, where that score, while it's an action film, it's obviously set in New York. So mm-hmm. it had a little bit more of a jazz, a little bit more of a Bernard Herrmann sort of throwback style to it. And in our early conversations, that kind of came up. It's like, you know what we did with 21 Bridges? We need to do that same sort of treatment, but in this spy world. So I knew going into it, it was going to be a little bit different, not your run-of-the-mill action stuff. But at the same time, you know, I hope I put my own little flavor on it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And you did, man, because I managed to listen to the whole score on Spotify.
And, oh, wow. That's a feat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because I have a long trip from my day job home, and I'm like, okay, here we go. So I sat there and listened to it. And I mean, it was great stuff. There was never a moment where it was dull, you know?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Even with some of the other tracks that the scores we've talked about, there are moments where it's getting like, okay, all right, it's a little. I never had that moment listening to it. I was always something enjoyable in every single piece. Even like one of the tracks, I can't remember. You had like a very low percussion playing. I don't know the scene in the show because you know I didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for this. But yeah, and it was really. I was like, okay, I hear the percussion. I hear this going on. And it was like, and all of a sudden it just ramped up. And I was like, wow, this is great. And I was going, I can't wait to talk to him about this because this is going to be fun.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the soundtracks are oftentimes, I think it's very easy at the end of a project to put them all together and just say, okay, here's 30 or 40 tracks, just release it because, you know, they don't sell like an Adele record.
Right. Right.
That's one thing that, you know, my history of like when I was younger making records and working with Henry when I was you know in my early 20s it really is something that I spend a lot of time on for that very reason. And you know, it's moving tracks around, it's editing some of the cues to make them, you know, if I've got a 5/8 bar in the middle of a 4/4 thing, right, to hit picture, I'm gonna edit that out for the listening experience,
right,
of the sound. So we do spend a lot of time on making that soundtrack, you know, a work of art in and of itself, and to make sense away from picture.
And I appreciate that because, you know, as Chris, he knows me well. He knows that when I listen to a score, I listen for that continuity. If I can listen to it by itself, as well as with the movie or the show that we're watching, because I like to listen to things, you know, in the car or while I'm working out or, you know, doing other things. And, you know, as he mentioned before, I am a classically trained musician. So I like a composition that is very easy on the ears and is enjoyable and not sound like it's piecemeal together, you know, because that's not fun. It's not fun at all.
Well, and that's how I became a composer, because I would listen to music and I would come up with stories in my head. And I still apply that, especially for the podcast, because if I can listen to it and get a visualization of something, it means the score is doing its job. It's providing the backdrop. And again, you know, every score that I've listened to that you created, especially Extraction, you know, they all had this, you know, it was never a moment where I was like, this could have been different.
Oh, Extraction was a fun one because it was, you know, the whole idea early on with that one was, okay, he's somebody who can kill somebody with anything.
Right. You know,
he can pick up a feather and kill you with it. This was sort of, I think that was something along the lines in an early pitch or an early meeting. Someone said something like that. And musically, I was like, all right, so how can I do that? Something like that with music? Because that seems like an interesting idea. And it was like, all right, I don't play cello, but I own one.
Right.
Let me mess around with it and see what I can come up with. And so, you know, a lot of the big sort of sounds of that was derived from, you know, me not knowing what I'm doing on a cello and producing it. I think bouncing it to that very Akai tape machine and then playing it back in, you know, doing a bunch of weird stuff to it.
Which so. I really wanted to bring that up because I see it back there and I'm like, oh, that is so awesome back there.
I should not have it on because it's a big part of my sound. actually shouldn't give away that trade secret. But yeah, no, I love doing things like that, bouncing things to tape, you know, anything to make it sound like something that I haven't heard before. That's what I feel like I spend most of my time doing is trying to sound different. And in the act of doing that, you just get creative and come up with cool things and you make discoveries. I might set out.
Oh, yeah.
The cello sound for Extraction, for instance, I did not think it was going to sound like that. That's not the idea I had. It was just the bigger idea of I'm going to mess around with a cello and try to get something. And then you make a discovery, you do something, you go, ooh, that was cool.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So speaking of that, we learned here recently that some of your music was recorded in a, was it a church or a cathedral?
Well, yeah, we for Citadel, you know, this was, the show is big in so many ways, and everyone at Amazon and Agbo from the early conversations, they were like, we need a big orchestral score. And just it being a series and the nature of series usually means you don't have that big of a musical budget to do that, especially with the amount of music that was in the show. And so I just sort of said early on, I'm like, all right, we're going to need this, this, and this to do this, thinking they'll give me maybe a third of that. And
right.
Everyone's credit. They were like, yeah, okay, let's do it. They were all in. It's so supportive of kind of what my vision was for the score and everything. It was fantastic. So with that, we recorded at Air Studios in London, which is an old,
nice.
I think it was old. It's a church, but I think it was maybe like a school of some sort, some liturgical school.
Right.
With some of the, you know, London, some of the Isabel Griffiths lot of musicians, some of the best musicians in the world. And we were able to do that because everyone at Agbo and Amazon sort of believed in us to let me do that.
That is awesome.
Did you have issues with any reverb or anything like that when you were recording?
Well, no, it's been, you know, that church, it's from the, I think, the 1800s. That studio's in use, and it's where a lot of people record. You know, Henry and I done most of our projects there. I think the only one I haven't done, the 21 Bridges, I think we did at Abbey Road.
Okay.
It's like right down the street.
Right.
So it's set up, it's got a, you know, a roof that lowers and stuff, but it is, it's funny, it is a very ecclesiastical sound in
right.
that room compared to somewhere like Abbey Road or say Fox in LA. It's got a character in and of itself, and it's one that I love, and, you know, usually 9 times out of 10, if I've got choice, that's where I want to record.
You know, and it does transfer over to the music, believe it or not, depending upon where you're at, your setting, where you record. You know, I lived in Germany at one time, and some of the places that I've played in, concert halls, you know, were built by kings, and they still have that old, you know, reverb sound, and it was like... even the chairs we were sitting in were over a few hundred years old, and it's just full of reverie when you go in there, and it does affect your music because you have to time the music right because you know that you've got an echo going on and it can be difficult. And so that's why I ask, you know, was it set up still the old way where that sound was bouncing everywhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an amazing room, and really to give all credit to Nick Woolidge, who's the recording engineer who recorded Extraction at Citadel and Extraction too. You know, he's a master of that room. He knows all of its quirks. He knows how to get the right sound. If I'm like, there's something with second violins,
right?
He's like, all right, fine. And he knows how to, you know, that's when someone knows a room as well as he knows air. It makes the world a difference.
That's amazing.
That's very easy. Yeah.
Now we're talking about all these like big films, like Extraction and everything else. Do you still get to this point where you just walk in and you're like, wow, I'm scoring a movie. You know, I'm working with Anthony and Joe Russo. I'm scoring a movie with Chris Hemsworth. You know, do you ever still have that moment, or is it like you gotten to the point where you're like, okay, I got this new job right here. I'm doing this right here.
Of course.
Okay.
One of the things that makes that a little more, like, to answer your question, yes, every day.
Okay.
But one of the reasons, especially with Joe and Anthony, why it's not like a debilitating, like, panic attack.
Right.
They're two of the kindest guys in Hollywood, not even in Hollywood, but just in life that I've ever met. They're super supportive. And there's not that maybe legacy sort of thing of Hollywood where like everyone who's super successful is also a giant jerk.
Right.
With them. So working with them, it's truly just, you have those thoughts like in the middle of a conversation with them, and then you're immediately at ease just because of their demeanor and their sort of artistic collaborative nature. Makes the whole process, you know, even if you do want to start freaking out, it makes the whole process so much fun and so easy.
And obviously it really helps out. I mean, because it always helps to have somebody that's collaborative and will be with you and stand by you, because like all the stuff you just got to ask for Citadel, you got.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. True. That's awesome. Now, there is one score I really do. I have to talk about. It's Uncharted 4.
Okay.
Okay, so there's one piece in particular. I listened to the score because I'm, like I said, I'm a fan of yours. I'm also a fan of Henry's.
Yeah.
And of course, when I found out Henry did the music for Uncharted 4, I was like, yes, I got to listen to this. I started listening to it, and it was this one track, The 12 Towers.
Right.
The way the track is going and everything else, it's got a nice action feel. And then it gets to this one part, and it's like this really big adventure action motif that hits in. I could just sit there, rewind it, and keep going back and keep listening to it. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is just amazing. I did hear that in Citadel. It was the opening part of the bathroom fight scene. It was like I had that action adventure moment again. I'm like, ooh. So I kept rewinding that one part. It was just the way the strings come in and the brass was coming in. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. He did it. He did Uncharted 4 again. This is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot on Uncharted because it was one of those projects where Henry and I came into the project for four versions of the game in,
Right.
So there's a history of the game, there's a history of the score, there's a massive fan base. People
Right.
love that game. And when we came in, it was like, okay, well, we've got to do our own thing because that's what we've been hired to do.
Right.
But we've got to stay true to this game. And we've got to this series and to this franchise and to this fan base. And so a lot of that early on was, how do we do that? How do
Right.
we sort of make sure that we're delivering a new product, but at the same time, making sure that the fans are happy? And so the first thing I did was play all three games. Again, I'd played them already, but I played them all in like a week, and I didn't do anything.
Wow.
Weird. By the time I came out, and probably was not very social looking then.
Right.
And so what I learned on that process is that, reinventing the wheel is great sometimes. Doing
Right.
something no one's ever heard of. The best things, the most memorable things, especially with tunes, I think a lot. You want it to almost sound familiar. You want something about that to be like, oh, I've heard this. No, I haven't heard this before. There's something about that that people will really latch on to. And it's the difference between a tune that's forgettable and memorable is if right away when you very first hear it, it already sounds like you've heard it before. That's
Right.
what makes a memorable tune. Now, don't ask me how to do that because I've maybe done it once or twice. But that's the thing when when you come up with something, you go, is this something? If I've stolen this from somebody or myself, or it's that little bit of thing that makes it memorable immediately.
That's
And that's really what I spend most of my career trying to do.
Well, you did it on the main theme for the Citadel because when I started listening to it, I told Chris, I'm like, I've heard this before somewhere. No, maybe I haven't. It was the exact words you just used. I was like, Chris, I said, this is very familiar. I can feel this.
And she did mention it because she said, I don't want to say that to him because I don't want to offend him, but I've heard this but somewhere before, but at the same time, no, I haven't.
Right? I'm like, and I
So
really like it.
right when you're saying it right there, I kind of pointed to her. I'm like, there you go.
Yeah.
It's your turn.
And I did. John Mayer did an album not too long ago, and it was kind of like a retro throwback. And he had this whole idea of like implanting false memories of like, you've heard music like this before. And then you actually go back and listen to music in the 80s. You're like, oh, it doesn't sound anything like it. Why
Right.
do I think that this is what music in the 80s sounded like?
It's the, what is it? The Mandela effect, I think that's the name of that, where it's like, oh,
Probably.
where it's like, oh yeah, no, that's, or it's the Bernstein Bears and the Bernstein Bears, I think that's the whole thing. And so yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, has there ever been a project that you worked on that was something that just stuck with you? Like even now, it was just this one thing. It was either something with like the behind the scenes moment or just working on the score itself. Was there ever a time where you just sit there and you'll randomly go back to it and like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. Every film, it's like you have a relationship with these projects. So they're all like this. And you'll see it on a film we worked on TNT, being played
Right.
back 10 or 12 years ago. And then you're immediately brought back to that time. I think probably one that stands out the most is 21 Bridges. I think I'm very proud of that score and of that film. It wasn't a giant $300 million summer blockbuster, but I had such a fun time doing music that I don't normally do.
Right.
And couldn't have been more supported by the Russo brothers and STX, who is the studio who released that.
Okay.
And that's such fun doing it. It very tragically turned out to be one of Chadwick's last films, and I got to meet him at the premiere. And
get to meet him.
Yeah, met him. He was super kind, super generous, and just be able to sort of chat with him for 5 or 10 minutes. And that was one where it was also one of the bigger ones, the first ones where I had my name on it. That project meant a lot to me. I think always will.
That's awesome, man. How was that having your name up there like that? I mean, did you do like the little kid dance and start going yes, yes in your head, yeah. Or did you do it out you know,
publicly?
Publicly.
Did it publicly.
There we go.
On the red carpet, jumping up and down.
There you go. That's a
did the happy dance.
Standing next to the Russo brothers, and you know, they're like, who is this guy over here now?
Doing the Carlton dance. On the red carpet.
Man, you would not want to see that.
Oh, that would have been great. I would have so brought that up too. Like, and we've got Alex Belcher on the podcast, and he did the Carlton dance on the red carpet for 21 Bridges. That would have been awesome.
That film meant a lot to me. But again, like all of them, you know, unless it was just a terrible experience, which I've been very fortunate to not have really any of those. You know, every film, it's you know, they're like not your children, but they're like a family member or something. You spend so much intimate time with them, like 100 hours a week on a project. It's out of the norm, as you know. And then all of a sudden it's over and it's out. And people watch it and have opinions about it. And it's this, then it's out of your control. So much of what's in your control for so long is then out of your control and it's out in the world. So seeing those, you know, even a just like a replay of it or an old trailer or something like that.
Right.
Bring it back.
Now, knowing this myself, because I've had moments where I'm sitting there late at night and I'm like, oh, I could change this note real quick, and I'll run up there, you know, and get on the computer and change something really big. And then, you know, like you said, you spend so much time on these projects, and then when they get released and they get out there, and you, like you said, everyone has their opinion on it, do you sit there and scour the reviews going, okay, mention the music, no, nothing about the music, oh music?
Sometimes, and sometimes no. I would be lying if I said I never did that. But I don't do it. It's not like a rule of like when it comes out, spending the days. You know, if it's something I'm very proud of, I'll probably do it. If it's something that I think has legs, like I did it for Citadel for sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then there's, you know, then there's other projects where it's you get a weird sense of closure. Like, this was great. I was proud of this. I'm done. I'm going to step away from it. 21 Bridges. I don't think I did that with 21 Bridges. I was so proud of it and I loved it so much. I was like, and I stepped away from it so cleanly, like, I'm happy. I don't need to read other people's opinions. And while I felt the same way about Citadel, it was like I was excited for the world to see it and wanted to see what the world was saying. You know, those sorts of things. It just kind of depends on the film.
And with Citadel, too, because I did try to do a little bit of research trying to see if I, you know, and a lot of reviews that I could find, which were a lot that mentioned the music, there was nothing negative. It was all positive. So,
that's great.
So, like I said, everything I was finding is all positive about the score. So, you know, kudos, man. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, especially to have, because not a lot of people pay attention to film music.
Right.
And, you know, that's something we do try to do on the podcast, you know, is try to bring it to light. Because as composers, we're you know, everyday Joe could care less. I'm like, oh, okay, it's film music, whatever. You know, if you're not Hans Zimmer, nobody cares. So basically, you know, and it's like, no. There's a lot of very talented and great artists out there, and you know, especially with Citadel, people need to know how great this music is. You know, people need to know how, hey, like, hey, this took a lot of time, it took a lot of effort, took a lot of talent. You know, we need to bring this to the forefront, and that's why we're so happy to be able to talk about Citadel, especially, but also just all of your work. And
that truly means a lot. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
as you guys know, it's not that it's unsung. It's like none of that matters. It is a lot of work. It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of man hours. It's managing a team of, technical assistants, of musicians, of orchestrators, of copyists, of additional composers, of arrangers, all of these things that take so much effort that if you're not in the world, you didn't know stuff I didn't know until I had gotten into it. it is certainly one of those things that's super interesting once you're in it. And when you meet people and talk to them about it, their ears perk up. It's like, I never would have thought that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's a fun gig, and it's fun talking about it to people that may not know about it. So I envy you guys.
Well, one thing with Citadel, I do want to ask. Now, I can hear some inspirations of like Jerry Goldsmith a little bit in there, maybe. Mm-hmm. All right. But another inspiration I want to ask, was it like the inspiration of fun? Because
I mean, no. No, not consciously, but the okay. Jerry Goldsmith thing is very, you know, Jerry, I love to death his scores, and he was known for doing, like, you know, multi-metered stuff. So like yes. a bar of two, then a bar of five, then a bar of three.
Oh yeah.
And so the main, I did a lot of that in this score. And the main titles has it, you know, dun, yes. dun, dun, mm-hmm. bar of six, bar of five, bar, I can't even remember, bar of six, bar of five, four, bar of seven, bar, you know, it's one of those things where you start tapping your foot and you're like, where the hell is one?
Like, anyway, I just got lost. Yeah. I got lost.
Well, we covered, so
covered that out of,
right. Right. Yeah. We covered The Mummy on air, and you know, The Mummy score definitely has that. And we got to talk to Marco Beltrami, and Marco yeah. was a study of Jerry's. And so when I read that Jerry Goldsmith was an inspiration for us, I was like, oh, I definitely got to bring this. I got to bring this up, because she is a huge Jerry Goldsmith fan.
I am. I like him.
Yeah, he's in a league that very few names get mentioned at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
He is one of the greats. Truly, he is.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
I sadly have went on record on The Mummy saying that there are some Jerry Goldsmith scores that I cannot get into. So I am going to honor that. There are some scores I'm going, I can't really get into this one too much, but I could appreciate the genius that is Jerry Goldsmith, and to have that mentioned for Citadel, that's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, another great inspiration and this is somebody that Joe and Anthony and I both mutually respect, and we talk about a lot, is Bernard Herrmann.
Oh, so,
you know, North by Northwest was a film that we talked about a lot, not, yes. not in specifics, you know what I mean? Like, we never get in specifics, like this one thing from there. It's more of like, you know, remember North by Northwest and then one scene. Yeah. Know exactly what scene you're talking about. You know, that feeling that you get there, that's what we want in this. That's what we want for this sequence. And so a lot of our conversations early on with Citadel were things like that. Or do you remember that scene from Heat?
Nice.
Where it's like, you know, and Elliot Goldenthal's score for that is just genius. Well,
it's Elliot Goldenthal. I mean, the man yeah. is, you know, awesome.
But, and you know, like for episode four for Citadel, that was the thing. There's the scene in Heat where he's just got that rhythm, and it's really quick. But it just goes, it starts at the very beginning and goes for like, it feels like 15 minutes. I'm sure it's more like seven or something. but episode four, we knew we needed something like that in Citadel. So it was like, okay, I need a rhythm that does something, can't be fast. So, you know, it's a lot of time spent going, how do we do that thing in our world? How do we evoke that sort of thing where we're tying things together and pushing us through? So, you know, that's one of those things where inspiration really comes from, you know, all sorts of places for these big projects. And when it's collaborative and you're working with people that you've done a lot of projects with, you develop a shorthand, which is a lot of fun. Because it takes, like, you remember that scene? You're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. You don't have to finish
it. Exactly. Nice.
Because you think like one big brain. You all knew what you're thinking and feeling and what needs to be done. It's great.
Yeah, very true.
So what is your creative process? I know when Chris scores, he will watch the film entirely without the tent music. So he can get a feel for what the scene might be, and then he can add his score piece to it. So what is your creative process when you create music?
Well, I think the best way to start for me is always, it's a conversation with the filmmakers or, you know, the showrunners or whomever to go, for me, I'm all about story. So it's like, okay, what story are we trying to tell? I've read the script, I understand the story, but like, what is the story? Like, boil it down to like a sentence or like four words or one word. What's this? Is it loss? Is it heartache? Is, you know, what,
right.
What is the simplest story that we're trying to tell? Because as a composer, oftentimes, like, we're really not, when you're doing film music, you're not doing concert music. It, meaning your goal is to support the filmmaker and their vision and the story that they're trying to tell. And oftentimes what we're actually doing is interpreting or translating the feelings and the story that the director or the showrunner wants to tell in a musical way. So I always start there. And then I go, okay, what music does that for you? That feeling that we've now narrowed down, what scores and what films and what music make you feel that way? So I make sure right from the get-go we're on the same page. Once I've had that conversation, then it's time to sit down, watch the film if you can. You know, sometimes I start early on a project and there's nothing shot, so I'll read the script. And then I try to have the big idea. So I always try to start. I don't like writing without the big idea. For Citadel, it was pretty easy. Before I started writing, I was like, I know I want the tune to be lyrical. And that was it. That was my big idea. I was like, I want a lyrical tune, a singable thing.
That's awesome.
And so we started from there. You know, on 21 Bridges, the whole thing was like, I'm going to use a harmonic minor scale. It was a harmonic minor scale with no second scale degree. So six note scale.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And if we didn't, if you analyze the hell out of it and you get to the very end, the very last cue, I was trying to evoke, you know, I remember Brian Kirk, the director, saying, I did a version. He's like, we need more. It's just not quite working. And I was like, oh, what if I just put a ninth in? What if I allow myself that note that I've deprived myself of
for the whole score, right?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it feels like a release. So, you know, I like setting guidelines on myself, coming up with a big idea and going, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. Or I am going to do it just this way. And really sort of boxing myself in. Because for me, and it might not be true for everyone, it forces me to get really, really creative in solving, you know, problems, solving musical problems.
But you're basically,
you're
competing against yourself, basically. In other words, you're making yourself better by setting those guidelines. You know, and as a musician, I used to do that, especially when I used to play competitively. I would set those guidelines and I was my worst critic on myself. And I would always strive to be better, you know, than the last time I played. And it is very difficult for a composer to emote emotion in their music or to try to get the director's ideas conveyed in music, because music is not the written word and not everybody speaks music, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think you did you do a lovely job, especially with all the scores that you've done, trying to convey that emotion and that depth and that feeling, you know. And that's one of the reasons why I like James Horner's music, is because he always was able to invoke emotion. Didn't matter what scene it was, you always had that emotional tie to what you were watching. And I think you do the same thing, and it's lovely. It really is.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's the job, and that's the it's not even the job, that's the quest of any project, is how do you do that? You know,
right.
Once you've done it once, you can't rinse and repeat. I mean, even with a sequel, you know, I found that out on Extraction 2. You've got to do something else. You've got to do it again. And that, so when you approach every project, you know, the original question, what my creative process, it's trying to do that exact thing in a new way, in a way that I haven't done before. And you know,
you're just making yourself better. That's all you're doing. Yeah. You're proving with each score.
And just talking with you, man, I can tell right from the start, you love what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell
most
it.
Thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There, being a composer myself, now I'm not to the caliber of you. My 15 minutes, well, 15 seconds of fame is a film called Snake Out of Compton. Yeah.
It was a parody film.
And the only reason it got, you know, some notable mention was because of how absurd it is. So, but even with that, it was still there. You always have, like you said, that quest of trying to better yourself for everything. And yeah, man, it's great. It's great what you're doing, really. And I'm very happy that we got to talk to you about Citadel, especially because with this score, I can tell how much you enjoyed it and how big of a scope it was. So I think, kind of circling back to the first thing I asked you, you know, did you have this moment where you're like, oh, it's kind of big in scope. I think to answer that question, I think you were pretty much a little bit of both. You're like, oh, this is big, but okay, let's just handle this.
Yeah, let's do this. We'll get it done.
Yeah, that's true. And it really, you know, it was for me, like when you're getting tasked to do that big of a thing, I didn't really start until I think we were at Scoring in London when I was like, oh, this is a big deal. It's not that I didn't know that intellectually, but sort of I hadn't allowed myself to sort of think that because there was so much music to write. And there was, you know, there was so much story to tell that it's like anytime that would start to creep in the brain, it'd be like one of those intrusive thoughts where you're like, nah, not now, not now. It's Scoring, you know, because so much of the hard work has already been done in the writing and the approval process and the orchestration. It was one of those moments when you've got these world-class musicians in a world-class hall with these world-class technical assistants and mix engineers and assistant engineers. And I'm just sitting in the control room, just kind of like, wow. Okay, now I'm going to allow myself to freak out a little bit.
You ever get excited after you write a piece and you get everybody to sit down and then you finally get to hear the orchestra play? To me, that would be like the most exciting moment. You go through all this process and then you finally get to hear it live.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it's one of those things too, where like for Citadel, you know, Everton Nelson, who's the leader anytime I record in London, he, you know, I'm writing first violin parts and I'm thinking like, all right, I'm going to do this for Ev. I'm going to try to, you know, I'm going to either not try to fake him out because he's such a better musician than I am. I can never do that. But, you know, I want to make this part interesting for Ev or for Bruce or for Nick or for Caroline or for Mary. You know, I want to, when you know musicians that well that you record with and work with often, there's, and that relationship goes back, as you know, hundreds of years between composers
right.
and their
right.
musicians. And for me, that's when I'm writing and I'm thinking about them in particular. And then when we get the music on the stands and we start recording and you hear it for the first time, and of course, like they nail it because I'm not recommending off or anything. It's not super complicated music and they sight read it and it sounds amazing. That moment is like, ah, that's what all that
right?
was. Four or five months was. That, this is what it was for.
Gives you goosebumps to hear it, doesn't it? You're like, oh,
and
yes.
In a lot of ways, while I love sharing it with the audience, you know, as a musician, that is sort of why we do it. It's just to hear these world-class musicians play it.
That's awesome. Well, Alex, I think that's about as much time as we can allow right now. For everybody listening, Citadel is now streaming on Amazon Prime Video. Definitely go check it out. Just for the music alone. I mean, the show's great, but definitely listen to the music. I mean, and check it out on Spotify, because Alex, you know, and he's got a lot of great work on available for everybody. YouTube it if you have to. I mean, it's great stuff. Seriously, just go listen to it. Alex, thank you so much for being on the show, man. It really has been a pleasure being able to talk to you about this, your career, your love for film music, and about Citadel as well.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. It's been a treat and an absolute pleasure chatting.
All right, Leslie, you got anything else?
No, that's about it.
All right, for Measuring the Score, as always, I'm Chris.
And I'm Leslie.
Have a good one.